Hello and thank you so much for joining me on the show today. This is the Diabetes Show on UK Health Radio, your global, real, feel-good radio station. My name is Peter Alton of Undefeated, and I'm your host for today and the coming weeks. Hello and welcome once again to the Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio. I hope you have had an amazing week. Hope you've had loads of fun things you've been doing. If you're over here in the UK, then I hope you made the most of the little bit of freedom we had, where we could meet with more than five other people. Because, of course, we are now restricted. As I record this, today is the first day where it is now illegal to meet with more than six of you in total. And it's got to be from only two households, no more than that. That's indoors or outdoors here in England. Scotland and Wales are slightly different. There's been a lot of confusion, a lot of arguments over whether or not it's right, whether it should be a bigger number of people, whether children should be included in it. But whatever your opinion, it's here to stay for now, and that is law. And apparently, I think there's a fine of over £3,000. I think I heard that. I've got no intention of breaking it, so I haven't actually checked it out, but I suggest that you likewise don't intend breaking it. Do your best. For us, we've got five of us living in our home at the moment, so that means we can have one person to visit us to still be law-abiding citizens. Don't know what it's like in your part of the world, but whatever it's like, be safe, be wise in the way that you interact with other people. If you've still got loads of freedom, still be wise. Don't go spreading this germ around or contracting it yourself. But where has this month gone to? We're already halfway through. This show goes out on the 16th of September, the first airing of it. Amazing that this month has flown past so quickly. Amazing that this year has flown past so quickly. It's getting to that point of the year where I worry whether or not I'm going to get the lawn nice and short before it gets waterlogged. Thankfully, I did manage to get it cut last week. And every opportunity between now and winter, I'll be out there when it's dry enough to get that lawn cut. Because one thing I cannot stand in my garden over winter is long grass. It just makes everything so much damper, so much more... miserable to look out upon when the grass is all unkept and long. So I try to keep it short right up to the last minute before. And some years I've got caught out totally. You know, you get back from work and it's dark and you can't go out and mow it. The only time you can get really is at the weekends, particularly after October the 28th, I think it is, or around that time, that weekend when the clocks go back over here and we lose an hour of daylight. So make the most of the weather at the moment. Make the most of the daylight at the moment. Get out there, tidy your gardens up, go for these nice long walks, because the rate this year is going, it won't be long before we hit winter. Of course, we've got autumn to come to before that, and it's been beginning to show signs of that even now in my garden. You know, the leaves are beginning to get blown off some of the trees. Some of the aces are beginning to look very red and quite beautiful. I'm looking forward to, you know, two or three weeks' time, the look of the trees in the parks. Then after that, of course, we get the deluge of leaves all over the pavements, and that's that bit I don't look forward to, you know, running along the pavements when there's loads of leaves around. I don't mind the leaves, it's what they're hiding that I don't like. You know, whenever we used to walk the kids to school, it would always used to be a sort of a minefield of has somebody left dog poop on the pavement amongst the leaves. Anyway, that's a bit gross, we'll move on from that topic. So I hope you are making the most of your life. I hope you're having a fantastic time at the moment and really are enjoying doing the things that you are allowed to do at the moment. We are going to go into some news about what is happening in the world of diabetes. I'm going to go to diabetes.co.uk's website and we're going to have a look at some of those articles. Later on, we've got an interview with a gentleman called Tavridis Karitonas, and he's an expert on developing equipment which can, or processes, I probably should say, which can help with infection control. So I think that might be interesting for you to know what is available out there, what some businesses might be putting in place to keep us safe. So we've got him on the show, and I think you'll find that fascinating. But without further ado, let's get into the news. What is in the news regarding diabetes? So first up, we're going to have a look at a study shows that COVID-19, I'm sorry, it's all these diabetes related things, nearly all of them are related to COVID-19 at the moment. Study shows COVID-19 vaccine may not be as effective among obese people. So now, not only have we got people who are obese and people who have high blood sugars and diabetes are more at risk of getting diabetes, not only have we got them being more at risk of developing complications, now as well it looks like this vaccine that we're all waiting for may not be as effective on people who are obese. Research has been carried out by the University of North Carolina, and they found that obesity impacts the severity of the killer virus in every way. Their figures suggested there was 113% higher risk of being hospitalized, a 74% chance of ending up in an intensive care, and the risk of death was 48%, so nearly 50% risk of death if you are obese and you contract for COVID-19. That is pretty scary. The lead author of the research, Professor Barry Popkin, said that it's a pretty big effect for him because it's a 50% increase, essentially. It's a really scary number. All of it is actually much higher than he ever expected. Speaking to the Guardian newspaper about the high percentages relating to death and hospital admission, he said the figures shocked me, to be honest. The study's co-author, Professor Melinda Beck, added, "Individuals with obesity are also more likely to experience physical ailments that make fighting the disease harder, such as sleep apnea, which increases pulmonary hypertension, or a body mass index that increases difficulties in a hospital setting with intubation." She added, "We know a COVID-19 vaccine will have a positive effect on obese people, but we suspect from all our knowledge from tests on the SARS vaccine and the flu vaccine, it will have a diminished benefit compared to other people who aren't obese." The team are now urging researchers working on a vaccine to ensure that they carry out clinical trials on obese people as well as on non-obese people so they can refine the treatment as best they can to help them as well. So if you are in the obese category or indeed in the overweight category, it's probably time to start really taking it seriously like never before. Maybe you want to go onto diabetes.co.uk's site and have a look at the low-carb diet that they do there. Maybe get David Cavan's book, Reversing Diabetes. That's another one which is good. Look into maybe the keto diet or maybe Patrick Holford's hybrid diet. We've had him on the show before. There's many diets out there which nowadays are more of a lifestyle change rather than just a fad diet. So please do look into it and see if you can help yourself to lose a little bit of that weight, because it could make the difference between, well, you've heard what it could make the difference between. That item took a bit long, didn't it? But it was an important one to get the message across. Next one is a German teenager is the first person who is known to have developed type 1 diabetes following a COVID-19 infection. He caught the COVID-19 infection. He was 19 years old. Didn't get any effects of it at the time. No symptoms at all. Didn't know he'd had it, I don't think. But then went on to develop type 1 diabetes. A professor, Matthias Lourdes of University in Kiel, I'm not going to even try to pronounce the name of it because you're going to laugh at me. But anyway, he said that his report cannot fully establish causality between COVID-19 and the development of diabetes in that particular patient. But the virus entry receptors are expressed on pancreatic beta cells. And given the circumstances, we suggest COVID-19 might negatively affect pancreatic function, perhaps through direct effects on beta cells. His findings suggest the COVID-19 attacks and kills the beta cells, so they stop working, producing insulin, which is then when type 1 develops. The next item is that weight loss is key to type 2 diabetes prevention and reversal. That's not a new thought, I don't think. But this particular study, Professor Ferenc at the University of Cambridge, he there is talking about the BMI, and that if somebody's BMI is aggressively lowered below their BMI threshold relatively soon after they develop diabetes, then it is possible to probably reverse most cases. He says, I think the fact that the BMI appears to have a threshold rather than a cumulative effect on the risk of diabetes really has potentially significant implications for how we think about changing screening, preventing, treating, and reversing diabetes. So all those previous items were from diabetes.co.uk. The next ones are going to be from diabetestimes.co.uk. And the first one there is, unfortunately, that mortality rates are higher among discharged inpatients with diabetes. I suspect that's probably because that many people who are discharged when they have got diabetes and they've been in for some problems, some complications to do with their diabetes, that their disease process is already quite a long way along its route. But obviously there are concerns about this and they're looking into it, and they've identified at the University of Warwick 48 risk factors, different risk factors, which they think should be considered when discharging those with diabetes. They were looking at 35 studies carried out around the world to develop their hypothesis. Professor Theo Arvanitis from the Institute of Digital Healthcare at WMG, University of Warwick, said the most common risk factor is in the demographic category of age, and the second most important factor is comorbidity burden. This comes under the patient medical factors category and means patients have more than one condition along with their diabetes. They also identified a BMI. Here's the old favourite again, BMI, as a significant risk, body mass index, with, of course, those at the heavier end of the scales being more at risk. Another item of news that I came across on the BBC site, actually, is probably something which is, we have covered it before, we have mentioned it before, and it's something which, if you have children or grandchildren, be alert, particularly if you've already got type 1 diabetes in your family, because it can very often follow that other kids get it as well. So we've got a daughter with type 1, she's 20, coming up to 21, and we've got other children as well, both older and younger. And really it's just a matter that during lockdown, the diagnosis and the number of people presenting with symptoms of type 1 diabetes fell by almost a third. Now, is that a real thing that actually there were a third less people developing it? Or is it that there were people or are people who are living with it because you still have a honeymoon period in type 1 where you're still producing some insulin? Are there people out there who are unwell and need to get diagnosed? So if there are any of the symptoms of diabetes, you know, the thirst, the more frequent urination, the tiredness, all those things, the sudden loss of weight with type 1, then please do go and get your child checked out for type 1. And remember, adults can develop it as well. So if you're getting that, then go and get tested as well. It's very, very important that we don't lose sight of the fact of all the other illnesses that are around, the other diseases that are around, just because we're all focusing on this virus. Remember, we had that topic some weeks ago, on the number of heart attacks being down during lockdown, because everyone was scared to go with it when they got some chest pain. But actually, that meant that because they didn't go, they ended up going to hospital later with a much worse problem, a cardiac arrest, and often not making it as well. So it's really important that we do, yes, take this virus seriously, but also we need to get help when we are ill or suspect that we are ill. and that goes for diagnosing type 1 diabetes if we're suspicious of it. So I encourage you, if you are suspicious, I'm sure that your doctor will not mind you booking in for a consult. Much better to be safe than sorry. Okay, that's the items in the news I've got for you this week. We are going to go into our interview, but before we do that, we are going to listen to some music. And I'm saying music, not a song. There's no corny title to share with you to preempt the interview topic. The interview topic, of course, is infection, and we're trying to, or infection control, actually, rather than infection, we should be saying. It's with a guy called Tavridis Karitonis, and he will be sharing some of the technology that is being used now to help fight this virus by killing it in premises, in businesses, in dentist clinics, podiatrist clinics, etc. So he will be talking about that. Before that, though, he chose the music this week, so you're in for a treat. You're going to get some nice, relaxing, classical music instead of me turning out whatever it might be that I like. I do like classical music as well. But anyway, he chose, first of all, Alexis French, and the title of the piece of music is called Wishing. And I suggest, if you're not driving, that you sit back, you close your eyes, put your feet up, relax, and just let that music flow over you. But don't go to sleep, okay? Because you've got to listen to the interview afterwards. Enjoy it. Alexis French and Wishing. So that was the piece of music called Wishing by Alexis French, and that was chosen by our guest today. You're listening to The Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio, and our guest is, if I can pronounce his name correctly, Tavridis Karitonis. Am I correct?
Yes, thanks, Peter. Yeah, you're right.
Close enough. Cool. Well, welcome to the show, and you're a bit of an expert on infection control, I believe.
Well, some might call that. So I work for a company that specializes in infection prevention and control technologies, and I head up a research and development department of the company. So I do have a bit of knowledge about that, about the technology and yeah, ways of preventing infections and controlling infections.
Okay, which is a pretty hot topic, so we'll get that into a minute. But I've already forgotten to do what I said I was going to do first of all. So you chose that piece of music. The listeners probably guessed that you did, because normally it's a bit of rock music for me. Tell us why you chose that piece of music, please.
It's just something that I perhaps listen to when I need to focus. So something that would just kind of focus my mind on a specific, you know, issue or something we'd work on. So I am a fan of classical music. I think it definitely narrows your thoughts. So, yeah, just one of my classic essentials think. Hopefully listeners had enjoyed that.
I'm sure they did. So thank you so much for that. It's a welcome break from my usual choices. Okay, so what does your role involve? You work at Innovos, is that right?
Innovos, that's correct.
Yeah. And you're research and development manager there.
That's correct, yes.
Okay, so so what do they pay you for? What do you do?
Well, essentially, we've been developing decontamination technologies since 2007. As my role as a research and development manager involves me looking into, we focus on these two technologies, which is hydrogen peroxide vapor and UVC light. So my role involves researching the technology, you know, trying to find ways of turning that into a product that then obviously the end user could use to prevent and control infections. So we've developed quite a few products, namely peroxide product that uses hydrogen peroxide as a decontamination agent. And there's a couple of other products called UltraV and UltraV Connect that employs UVC light to decontaminate all exposed surfaces against viruses and bacteria.
We had somebody on the show actually a few weeks ago from Honeywell Aerospace, and they're incorporating a UV light device that goes in between flights down the plane and does that for it, sanitizes the area. Sorry, carry on, I interrupted.
So obviously UVC light is one of the technology could be used, and it's quite effective. It's important to know that we not only focus on the right deployment of the technology, and we're trying to find best ways of making sure we can validate our processes. So we've invested a lot of time in making sure that we can validate our hydrogen peroxide processes to make sure we get the same level of efficacy every single time that the technology or the system is deployed. And that's true for UVC technology as well. And there's different ways of going about it, but we've developed these sensors called spectrums. So, and you know, these, when employed with the system, would ensure that you get the same level of efficacy, in a way, the same dose of light, of ultra UVC light, on each surface, so that you know you can trust and rest assured that the process is successful and you know all the surfaces are decontaminated. So there's a lot of research and a lot of development to try and you know develop this technology so that you know everybody could use it. Specifically, we obviously cater for healthcare environments, but it's not to say that different sectors and industries are now reaching out. But it's the same thing, is trying to make sure that that technology is accessible and you know people can deploy it and get the best out of it.
Okay. I know recently, when the COVID things first started, one of the nursing homes I went to had a hand washing demo thing, and you bunged on some false germs, this cream onto your hand, washed them, and then put them under ultraviolet light to see how good they were. Is there technology available yet that can actually see how well the ultraviolet light has cleansed the area that it's supposed to be cleansing? Or is it just a matter of the dose is known to do the job and you trust that it has done the job?
Yes, I think it starts, well, specifically for UVC light, it starts with some of the parameters like the output or the intensity of your light. And then clearly that should be linked to some of the efficacy results, which is basically you do your trials trying to kill an actual organism. Most of the time you choose an organism that's quite difficult to kill. For example, some would choose to decontaminate against Bacillus spores. So these are quite known to be very resistant, in fact, the most resistant organism, to kind of work out the dose requirement to achieve the level of effectiveness against that organism. Mm-hmm. And then there's obviously that process or that cycle is then mapped against, you know, your the environment you're hoping to decontaminate after. And again, different technologies go about that in different ways. We basically use those sensors that you position them around the room to make sure that when you run the process, it will keep the system going for the time it needs to get that dose. And basically, because that's linked to the efficacy results from our clinical studies, you get this level of efficacy. So that's probably one of the best ways of making sure that, you know, your process is validated.
I was going to say, it sounds like one of the best ways of doing it at the moment. I guess in another, I don't know, 20 years, maybe even 6 months, the rate technology is going at the moment with viruses and things, I guess eventually they'll be able to literally see the virus on the surface and know that it's been killed eventually. But I shouldn't think we're anywhere near there just yet. Tell me, I always like to know a little bit more about the guests themselves. Did you have a sort of like a childhood passion for killing germs, or how did you get into this industry?
Yeah, so I'm a mechanical engineer, and okay. I do have a passion for developing a process and then following that to achieve, you know, the ultimate result. And I've started the company just over 6 years ago, and I will realize that, you know, the requirement for decontamination can drive the development of the technology to make sure that something that perhaps could be out of reach for, you know, your normal operators or your domestic staff, so hydrogen peroxide technology, could be potentially deployed every single time after the manual clean. So basically, I have this passion to try and give these domestic staff or people that employ that technology the power to finish the job and, you know, do the job really well. We know that manual cleaning isn't exactly, 100%, effective against removing all of the contamination. That's why technology has to be deployed. So the next step is, how do you develop those products and use the right technology to enable people to take advantage of those and leverage those benefits? So when I got to work with those hydrogen peroxide technology, UV-Solite, I got really passionate about developing these cycles. So understanding exactly, what you need to do and what parameters to maintain to, you know, to get the right level of effectiveness, and then designing that into a product everybody can deploy. And I think that's evident in our systems, where it basically means that, you follow simple steps where you literally have to press, single button, and everything that happens automatically. So we've developed these robotic decontamination systems that kind of do all of the thinking for you, and enables you to do your job really well and stay in control of the process, which I think is quite key going forward, given the challenges that we're currently faced with. So that's how I got into industry. And then as soon as you do a lot more research, you realize that actually with some technological advancements, you can definitely leverage, everybody could leverage the benefits of using the UVC light or hydrogen peroxide technology to get the best results.
So the hydrogen peroxide technology, the ultraviolet light technology, they're the key things that you're working with at the moment, it sounds. Those are both effective against the COVID virus?
That's true. And the reason we know that is that, as I mentioned previously, normally when you develop your decontamination cycle, and that's true for both UVC light and hydrogen peroxide technology, you'd have to pick your challenge to make sure that if you do get the right level of efficacy for this challenge, you can apply the same to the organisms that are, less resistant to decontamination. And then this classification where you see bacterial spores being at the top of the resistance classification, and envelope viruses, which SARS-CoV-2 virus, the cause of the COVID-19 evidently which is an envelope virus. So if you can prove your efficacy against an organism that's more resistant than the COVID-19 or the virus that causes COVID-19, and we know that the hydrogen peroxide technology can achieve high level of efficacy against bacterial spores, which is the most resistant organism. And our UV-Solite technology with the right parameters can achieve a high level of efficacy on bacterial spores as well. So that means that it can definitely deal with SARS-CoV-2 virus, which is the virus that causes COVID-19 disease.
Okay. Okay, Alex. Maybe we should actually just talk very briefly to the listeners, let the listeners know, what exactly is a virus? What this virus has, come from China, we reckon, pretty sure. But what is its intention? What's its aim? What's its purpose? What's it trying to do?
So that's my mechanical engineering talking, and just to simplify it. So viruses are like microorganisms which can basically infect human cells and then multiply. And I suppose viruses definitely need to have a host to thrive and multiply. So simply speaking, they carry these RNA to a living cell, and then they would infect that cell with their RNA, and that's how they multiply. And then the cell realizes that, making, virus cells, and basically would burst, and then there's more virus being created, and then they would attack more cells, and that's how the reaction happens. And I think this is where the immune system realizes that something isn't right. And then they would react to try and deal with it. So viruses are definitely something that we should avoid, and we should try and find a way of getting rid of those.
So tell me about it. I might even employ your company's services. You know, I'm a podiatrist. Okay. So the human papilloma virus, otherwise known as the verruca, it's the bane of our life. They are so difficult to get rid of.
And specifically with this virus, it has been proven, although there's quite a few different sources of information, but I think all of them agree that this virus is able to survive on the surface for a number of days, and depending on the surface as well, which basically means that although you might be less likely to get infected from, you know, the touching of the surface, keeping your good hand hygiene. There's still a level of risk. And this is where we focus what we like to call these four vectors of transmission, and although there might be more than that, but we focus on surfaces, water, people, and air. Okay. I mean, most surfaces are now, you know, are a potential vector of transmission. And something that used to be a challenge in a hospital now is a challenge everywhere. So, you know, we have a virus, it's really prevalent, and and people do get sick and have bad consequences. Their immune system is compromised. It means that whether you work in public sector, private sector, or NHS, you basically face the same challenge, which basically means you have to employ the same sort of technologies and practices to make sure you can, you know, prevent the infection or control the infection, as healthcare environments do.
Right. Okay. So I'm imagining that your equipment, your technology, isn't for the general punter on the street. So the listeners themselves may not need to invest in it. But it will be used by organisations to make the environment that the listeners might be going into safer for them, yeah?
Well, that's true, Peter, although it's important to say that, again, our ethos is try and design products that would be, you know, most accessible by everybody. Okay. In a way of where we're trying. So we employ, our VHP technology is quite disruptive because we're able to use low concentration hydrogen peroxide, which is basically less than 8%, to achieve high level of efficacy against bacterial spores. So it means that, it kind of includes most of the, operator groups. Any chemicals in at higher concentration might exclude some of the groups because they require, more training. Although it's fair to say that we obviously provide training. And because we predominantly focus on NHS environments, so every single operator or domestic person would receive training in order to use our equipment. But once they've got the training and they can follow the standard operating procedure, the process is easy. However, it does mean that, business leaders and, office managers could still employ the same technology, and they can get their staff trained and, they can decontaminate their spaces. And in fact, I'm a great believer that every single business leader should consider that their cleaning staff is basically continuing their business, because without them, they might have to close. Yeah. So it means that they need to look at their domestic staff and say, well, look, guys, the business is open because of you. So they need to upskill everybody, give them the right training, give them the right technology, and have a proactive plan in place instead of waiting for people to, be confirmed to have a case. They should have a proactive plan in place where they decontaminate proactively, perhaps overnight when the office is empty, to make sure they have the rolling program to keep their businesses open. And I guess that would definitely instill some confidence in those businesses and these kind of team leaders and managers to say that they've taken all the right approach to make sure that not only they can keep their business open, but they look after their employees.
Yeah. Cool. Okay, so people are returning more and more to normal life, although with the government's announcement this week, for Monday, only six people can meet together. Things are going backtracking a little bit, but things are getting a little bit more normal. What are the potential risks that people really should be aware of, do you think, regarding the virus?
Yeah, and I think, and it's great you mentioned what just recently happened. So I think people should still remember that keeping your hand hygiene, your high standard, is absolutely key, and keeping your social distance where appropriate, and wearing safe face coverings where appropriate as well. It's definitely the key three things that everybody can do to make sure that you do your bit to keep this infection away. However, the other stuff that can be done in public and private sector is that we definitely have to employ these proactive approaches, have a policy in place, whether that's an office space, a factory, public space, where we proactively decontaminate surfaces to reduce the risk of infection, in retrospect, to break the chain of infection, to make sure the people that you use the space are protected. So I think we should still continue with good hand hygiene, and we should always do that. We should definitely socially distance if possible. We should wear face coverings where required, and we should definitely have proactive cleaning protocols in place. And we should absolutely employ technology to make sure that we definitely decontaminate every single space and every single surface.
Okay, so I might be shooting myself in the foot here. So I've got a couple of podiatry clinics, one of the clinics has got two clinical rooms, which is great because that means that we can see somebody, and then the receptionist can
clean the other room prior to the next person coming in. My other clinic, I've only got one room. So we leave a gap in between time, a 15-minute gap, where we clean and wipe in between time. And we do our best. You know, we're trying to minimise the risk to any of our clients, of course, and to ourselves. And we're cleaning all surfaces that are likely to be touched by anyone. What more could we do? I mean, so I won't use brand names of what we're cleaning with, but you know, we're cleaning with things that are supposed to be efficient against coronavirus. What would you say to a business like ours, but we can take things to another level? As I say, I might be shooting myself in the foot here. You might be saying this and then sending me an invoice for something.
No, so I suppose the one thing to say that, you know, you're not the only business to have this challenge. And clearly you obviously just described the process, which is a good process. And you've taken quite a few pieces there. I suppose we, as I mentioned previously, manual cleaning might not be enough to do the job fully. And you mentioned that you leave the room for 15 minutes. Well, a good solution would be UVC Life technology. And evidently we have this fixed UVC system, but it basically would take around 15 minutes to decontaminate that space. We often get approached by businesses where they say we have to leave the room, you know, closed for 2 hours or 3 hours, which basically renders the whole practice, you know, impossible, given that, you know, if you leave the room, you know, empty for 2 hours, you can't really run your business. So what we do say is you obviously do your manual cleaning and then you employ technology that will, you know, get all this in every single surface. So UVC light technology would be absolutely key in between those patients. And then perhaps overnight when you have more time, although the hydrogen peroxide process would take about 2 hours, but still could be employed to get into every, you know, nooks and crannies to decontaminate, you know, those to a higher level. Wow. But UVC technology for your specific example would be great. And again, we've just developed this good fixed UVC system, which basically means as soon as you close the door, there's a process monitor on the outside. You can choose a program and then come back and your space is decontaminated.
Okay. We'll talk afterwards. Okay. So businesses like ours, we're going to try and do the best we can to make sure it is secure. What should people be looking for? I mean, obviously not everyone's going to have that sort of technology, and we haven't at the moment. Are there some sort of ground rules, do you think, that people should look for? For example, we went to a restaurant the other day, but we didn't stay there because we just observed that we didn't feel that they were cleaning as well as they should do or could do in between time. What have you got any guidance that you might be able to give people there? What to look out for?
So I think it's really good that you mentioned. So I think people should be more aware of what's actually happening and whether the space that you're about to enter, whether that's in a restaurant, a pub, or you know, the office space, has been decontaminated. In fact, if I worked anywhere, I would definitely ask my team leader or managers, is there a proactive, you know, policy in place to make sure that these surfaces are wiped and cleaned and decontaminated every single time, you know, we leave the building? So I suppose we should definitely see some good practices. So we should see one-way systems. We should see that we, you know, if your example of a restaurant, that we are spaced apart. And then, you know, the tables are definitely cleaned using appropriate chemicals. It's not to say that some businesses turn to these, we like to call them, you know, fogging machines, without actually understanding or asking the relevant question about, you know, what chemicals are used, what process is being carried out, what sort of claims the business is making, and ultimately, is it safe for me to be there after the process is carried out? Yeah. There's a great risk of substituting one hazard or challenge, which is the virus particles, with the other, which might be some remaining chemicals. And that's why we think that, well, hydrogen peroxide is a good decontaminating agent because it basically breaks down into oxygen and water, leaving no residue behind. Yeah. So I think these are the sort of questions that everybody should be thinking of, specifically in your work environment. But as you say, if you enter the restaurant and you can't really see that, you know, people are adhering to some of the policies and then guidance has been provided, I think the best practice would be to perhaps leave the space and look after yourself. But good hand hygiene and social distancing is definitely key. Everybody can do that.
Okay. And it's pretty much the same between different age groups. It's important for everyone, isn't it? Obviously, the older you are, the more vulnerable you are, the more likely you are to have complications. But everyone's got to do their bit.
That's true, and although there's clearly, you know, some age differences there, but I suppose if you have a compromised immune system, you might have diabetes, for example, and if you catch that virus, you might be in the risk group. So I think regardless of your age, I think everybody should stick to these guidances and do their bit to try and, you know, get rid of this virus, simply speaking.
Okay, so we're coming to a bit of a close, really, I think, to the interview. And I suppose I'd like really just the listeners, if you can just concisely tell them, what are your top tips for them as listeners to keep safe? And then maybe just some, for bonus for me, just some specific tips for me as a business as well.
Yeah, so I think I'll repeat myself, but I think these are the key messages that we all can do our bit, and we should all keep our hand hygiene to excellent standard, and we should all try and keep our social distancing. And I think we can all play a part of asking all the relevant questions and helping your team leaders and managers make the right decisions about the decontamination. We should all show high respect to people that do the cleaning, because again, they keep your offices open, and we should definitely try and find ways of upskilling them and supporting them in what they're doing. As for you, I think you should definitely look at your cleaning, you know, policy and what, you know, and your cleaning windows, and you should absolutely try and employ technology, not only to shorten your times of when you can't actually enter the room, but to make sure that you break that chain of infection if that were to happen. So I suppose if you do get somebody to say, well, you know, unfortunately, got tested positive, you don't have to, you know, react to that straight away. You know, your policy means that every single time you use the decontamination technology, so there's no real change. You should just continue to do so.
Okie dokes. Well, the good thing about the diabetes show and the foot health show, of course, is that most people have got feet, and there's a lot of people with diabetes of all different ages. So there are going to be listeners who are who have their own businesses. So please, it'd be wrong for me not to ask you to share your website and where people can find out more about the products that you've developed.
Please. Yes. So the website is www.inibos.com, and you can find a lot more information there, including we have this work infection prevention tool, where you basically add some details there, and we'll give you some information about, you know, what technology would best suit your specific requirements. And there's a lot of useful information as well. We run every 3 weeks we run a webinar about specific topics, so you can get information about that. So everything to do infection prevention, and obviously all the, you know, kind of high topics, there's a lot of useful information there. As for individuals and obviously businesses and private sector, clearly the healthcare sector as well.
Okay, brilliant. Well, thank you so much for your time today. It's been a fascinating interview, and I will talk to you as soon as we come off the interview as well. And before that, just would like to close out by you sharing your other piece of beautiful music that you chose. You're really showing me up, by the way. Please just introduce to the listeners the second piece of your music.
Okay, it's another one from my classic essentials, actually. And again, I tend to listen to this sort of music when I need to focus and I need some good background. Yeah, so that's a piece from Leanne Flesher, and it's called Sheep May Safely Glaze, and that's one of my classic essentials as well, where I tend to listen to this sort of music when I try and focus on specific tasks or subjects that need to resolve. So I hope you're going to enjoy this. Another kind of relaxing tune.
I think that was written by Bach, wasn't it? If I show off to the listeners that actually I did look on YouTube beforehand to check what you'd chosen.
Okay. I've said your listeners, as you say, is a bit different, I guess, than what you normally...
Absolutely. I've had Vivaldi on before, but that's probably about it classically. I do like classical music, though, so it's just I don't know much about it. Thank you so much for your time, and keep safe, thanks, keep well, and good luck with the business.
Thanks, Peter. Thanks for having me.
That was Leon Fleischer playing Johann Sebastian Bach's Sheep May Safely Graze. You are listening to The Diabetes Show. If you're still awake after listening to that beautiful bit of music, then the show is about to end. We've had a fantastic time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I hope you have enjoyed listening to that music as well as to Tadvidas speaking about that infection control. As ever, if you do have any questions about the topic today or about anything to do with diabetes or about the show, some ideas for it, you want to be on it yourself, you've got a great story to tell, you've got a suggestion of a topic, then please do get in touch with us. You can either get in touch with us, you can do it via Facebook. If you look up Undefeated, spelled UNDEFEETED, so all E's, on Facebook, then you can do that. You can contact us via Twitter if you want to, at Be Undefeated, or you can contact us at the email that we normally use for here, which is thediabetesshow@undefeated.org. thediabetesshow@undefeated.org. And be more than happy to get back to you and try and meet whatever need it is that you have. Perhaps you just want to choose some more music. Maybe you want to oust out me and my rock music and have more classical music on the show. I'll try and do that for you. I have got a piece in mind actually coming up for a couple of weeks' time. Anyway, keep safe. Enjoy yourself. Have a fantastic week. And that is it for this week's show. You've been listening to Peter Alton with The Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio, your global, real, feel-good radio station. All that remains is for me to say have a fantastic week. Stay safe in the diabetes sweet spot. Live in the ideal diabetic lifestyle. I look forward to sharing more with you next week. Take good care and God bless.